So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
Time to play the game. Time to play the game! The game, and how you play it, all about control. And if you can take it, all about your debt. And if you can play it, it's all about pain. And who's gonna make it? I am the game, you don't wanna play me. I am control, no way you can shake me. I am heavy debt, no way you can pay me. I am the pain, and I know you can't take me. Look over your shoulder, ready to run like a Cleveland bitch from a smoking gun. I am the game, and I so move on out, you can die like a fool. Try to figure out what my mood's gonna be. Come on over, Sunday, why don't you ask me? Don't you forget there's a price you can pay. Cause I am the game and I want to play.
LouisvillePolitics.com, your favorite spot on the web for keeping up with what's really going on. And I tell you, we've got, as always, a lot to talk about. We're waiting for Dale the Truth to join us. He was having some problems earlier, and he's going to call from his cell phone. So he should be with us here in just a few minutes, and we'll see how we go from there. As a matter of fact, let's do this. Let's do something I don't ever do. Let's give him a call. You guys want to listen to this, right? Why not? Let's do it. So let's call Dale the Truth right now and see what we can get with him. Here we go. Ah, there it is. Now let's see if he answers.
Your call has been forwarded to an automatic voice message
system. Well, okay.
0283.
Okay, well, I guess that's going to take care of that. I'm not sure he'll get a hold of us in a minute. He's probably in a dead spot. Anyway, so much going on around the world, around the country, right here in Louisville. I do want to start with one story. We now have some idea of what the costs are for the Barbara Shanklin ethics case. You know, we spent mega time and effort trying to get accountability here. The Metro Council, 7 members, decided they didn't want to get rid of Barbara Shanklin. She was able to keep her job by one vote. Anyway, here's your cost. It costs $173,000. You heard me right, folks. $173,000 for Barbara Shanklin and her defense. Aubrey Williams, Barbara Shanklin's attorney, just claimed fees that were capped $90,000, so he took the cap. The county attorney's office approved those bills. It was only about a $700 difference. What was really interesting to me isn't so much the total amount, the $173,000. It's really interesting to me because they're acting like this is kind of a huge, huge, crazy deal, and they just didn't realize it would be this much. We just went through this with Judy Greene. We just went through this with the late Dr. Judy Greene, less than 2 years ago. So, you know, to act like anybody is shocked that the expense was so high by the Metro Council, you shouldn't be shocked at all. We expect this. But to give you some idea of how these, Aubrey Williams, her Barbara Shankle's attorney, thinks he can charge and take advantage, and I do mean take advantage, of taxpayer money, some of the invoices that he submitted, he wanted to be compensated at $150 an hour for 6.25 hours that he spent writing an opinion page article for the Courier-Journal. He wanted the taxpayers to pay him for writing an opinion piece that was printed in the Courier-Journal. That one was denied by Michael Connell, thank goodness. These are the kind of things that go on. Additionally, the attorneys actually, when they speak to the media, they actually charge we the taxpayer and bill we the taxpayer, money at an hourly rate for speaking to the media. So if they talk to the Courier-Journal for 5 or 10 minutes, they bill out 10 minutes of their time for talking to the Courier-Journal. These are the kind of things that these guys bill for. And I think it's atrocious that those kind of billings are even acceptable to be billed on taxpayer dimes. How are you, Dale?
I'm okay. I had to get in a better cell. I hope you can hear me okay on this crappy phone.
I can hear you fine now. I actually tried to call you a minute ago to see how it would work out, but I figured you were probably in a bad cell zone when your voicemail. So
I was. I had no signal. I heard you talking about all these big hundreds of dollars per hour. I thought you were telling me how much you charge for a moment there.
Well, if I did, let me put it this way. If I charged that kind of money, we'd be in great shape. A lot of these politicians who are scared of what I'm doing now would be out of job already. Let's put it that way.
Oh, yeah.
But it's really fascinating to me, though. We wanted to charge $150 an hour for 6.25 hours over a 4-day period for writing his own opinion piece and the Courier-Journal printing it. I mean, just like me, I should get paid from the taxpayers for writing every opinion piece I write and put on my website. Why not? Same thing. It's all opinion.
Well,
when they
pay this much, I mean, follow the money. And who? And not only follow the money, but follow the votes. And who does he work for? Who elects him? Or who chooses him?
Well, that's exactly it, And I really hate the fact that we pay these guys. I mean, they actually build their time for speaking to media in general. I hate the fact that the taxpayers are stuck on the hook for that. That's one of the reasons I think that, once something comes out of the Ethics Commission, and the Ethics Commission has found guilt, at that point, I don't think Metro Council members are entitled to free legal service. The Ethics Commission was set up to determine guilt or innocence. So, if they want legal counsel beyond that, I mean, I'm all for legal counsel at the Ethics Commission. Don't get me wrong. But if Metro Council members want legal attention and legal help beyond that, it should come out of their pocket. If they've already found guilty, then they're guilty. And then all we have to do really is decide the criminality of it. Let them pay for it. And I'm really sick of that. And there's all kinds of different things in here. Something as simple as serving a subpoena. You got to try to serve an subpoena 4, 5, 6 times to Barbara Shanklin. Why is Barbara Shanklin hiding from a subpoena, which she is? You know where she's at 99% of the time, and she refuses to come to the door or answer because she doesn't want to sign a subpoena. It's that kind of stupid stuff. So I just thought the billing, $173,000, but there's an example of some of the things that you guys are being billed for, and I found that insulting.
People get the government they deserve that, and that the problem is, in her district, they're going to overwhelmingly reelect her when she's up for election again.
Oh, probably so. I don't think there's any doubt about
but
that.
They get what they deserve. They don't have a problem with it. That's what I said. They give her money. They're okay with it. We've talked about it before. They're giving her money hand over fist, so they don't care what she wastes the money on.
Well, I agree. I agree with you, and that is the biggest problem. And and the fact that you had one Metro Council member is all it took to get her impeached, and they didn't have the balls to follow through with it. That's very disturbing in itself to me.
Yep, I agree.
And we look at all this stuff. What's really interesting too is we look today. You know, that we've been doing this 50th anniversary of Dr. King's I Have a Dream speech, right? And everybody's going crazy about this. And I personally think that Dr. King would be rolling over in his grave when he sees what black community has done to itself. You know, and the racist undertones and everything else that goes along with everything when it comes to people of color today. And I know that sounds racist for me, being the ultimate middle-class white guy, and it's not intended to be, because I do everything I can to help everybody, black, white, green, yellow, or purple. And I work with a lot of prominent African-Americans right here in the Louisville community trying to make a better life, you know, and we just can't seem to get there. So I sit back and I think about this 50th anniversary of Dr. King, a man I have a lot of respect for, and his I Have a Dream speech was probably the best thing ever written in a public speech, in my opinion, or one of the best. You know, and then I start looking at things, and I see a speech by Bill Clinton. And Bill Clinton actually tries to tie, talking about Dr. King's Jr. I Have a Dream speech in Washington today, he actually tried to imply that it was easier to buy an assault weapon in the U.S. than it is to vote in elections. Now, I'm sure the underpinning here was, you know, Dr. King was talking about, you know, raising up and having the right to vote and the other things, and I Have a Dream speech, and, you know, you guys can find it on the net. But it's totally fascinating to me how Bill Clinton goes on to say that a great democracy does not make it harder to vote than it does to buy an assault weapon. Now, I don't know what world Bill Clinton lives in, but trying to take issue with the fact there are voter ID laws being passed all over the country, you know, where you're going to have to show an ID to vote, which most every place in the damn world has a voter ID law, except right here. But to try to even think about tying that into federal gun laws, you have to show a photo ID. Federal gun laws, you have to undergo a background check. You know, so how he can sit here and try to say that this is anything, and the irony of all, and the saddest part of all is, how was Dr. King killed? Dr. King was killed by a bullet. He was shot. He was assassinated. And Bill Clinton wants to use this time of all times to try to compare a bolt to an assault weapon, knowing the history of Dr. King.
Yeah. Well, Bill Clinton was the first black president, so that puts him above reproach. We know that, number one. But
sure.
Number two, let's take him at face value. Let's take him at his word, which you should never take Bill Clinton at his word. So let's take him at his word that it's easier to get an assault weapon than vote. And point blank, I tell him good. It should be easier to get an assault weapon than a vote, because, number one, an assault weapon has never killed anybody without some evil mind directing it to kill somebody. And number two, once you elect some of these politicians, the same set of politicians that we just talked about who keep getting reelected, you get up to the national and the global level, and look at the hundreds and thousands of millions that national and global politicians kill. So an assault rifle cannot kill anybody without someone pulling the trigger, but elected politicians can kill thousands and thousands with drones. So I think it should be easier to get an assault weapon than to vote.
Yeah, you know what? I can't really argue with that logic, because it's totally mind-boggling to me that you can make a statement like that.
You know what Joseph Stalin said? He said, one death is a murder, but 1,000 is a statistic.
Yeah, well, there you go. It's very true, too, especially when you look at things today. You know, so I just find it interesting. We see all this kind of garbage out there. Of course, you've got Obama out there, pushing liberal logic, you know, and trying to act like he knows all about Martin Luther King's struggle. Obama, I think, is the first white president we've had in about 40 years. You know, but everybody wants to say.
I think you said one night on the air, didn't you say he was the first gay president, Ed?
Yeah, well, no, I didn't say he was the first gay president. I think he's the first known gay president.
I don't know if he's the first, you know, yeah, he might be the first openly, quote-unquote, openly gay president.
He's not openly gay. He's in the closet. No, he's trying to closet.
That's what I'm saying, quote-unquote. That's what, you know, Larry Sinclair would say. He's been out of the closet and out of a lot of other places. But you know, I guess you'd have to call him the first, quote-unquote, openly gay president, because there's been a lot of presidents that have gone down to the Bohemian Grove in California and participated in a lot of gay activities. We're not supposed to talk about that, though.
No, we're not allowed to talk about that. But I find those things kind of interesting, too. You know, and then you got, Larry Sinclair and Donald, the choir director at his old church, all those. I mean, there's three people that were killed within 30 days. I've got the story somewhere. I'll try to find it later. But, you know, there's no doubt in my mind that Barack Obama is a gay president. There's none at all. I think the evidence is very clear on that, but the mainstream media, of course, will not deal with it. One thing I think is pretty interesting.
I have to ask you a question based on that, Ed. What do you think about which president, Bill Clinton or Obama, will become the first HIV president? That's the question. Because that's a close call, you know, all the activity Bill was involved in and the kind of activity that allegedly Barry's been involved in. I just wonder which one of those two will be the first HIV-positive president. That's what I want to know.
Well, that's a good question, but we'll never know to find out who would win that bet. You know, that's just the way that one is, but that's an interesting question. You know, one thing I want to point out from a historical perspective, though, a lot of people want to know, you know, why with Martin Luther King Jr., you know, since I just mentioned the I Have a Dream speech, why you don't see that on TV all the time, or why doesn't everybody share that all the time? Well, folks, you can find it online. You can go online and search. Use your search engine, and you can find a speech. You can find a video of Dr. King making the speech, and you can also find a text copy of the speech as well. But, you know, but for the most part, speech is copyrighted. King's estate has had a copyright to that speech, and has had it enforced for forever. I mean, it's just the way it is. It was really interesting to me because I couldn't figure out how that speech could be copyrighted. I mean, this just happened to find on a blip because I was trying to find out why the speech wasn't around so easily anymore. And I couldn't figure out how or why that speech could be copyrighted, because he made that speech in a public forum. He made that speech to the public media. You know what I mean? All of these things are public. So if you or I go outside the door and we say something public, if I speak to the media, it's public domain. But interestingly enough, In 1999, this whole copyright thing started back in December of 1963. But in 1999, there was a judge in the case that was called the Estate of Martin Luther King Jr. versus CBS. The judge determined that this particular speech was distributed first to the news media and not to the public. At that point, it became a limited publication, not a general publication. So I'm really having a problem with that, because what that means to me is that anytime I would say, let's say, send a press release to the media first, then make a speech using that press release, does that mean that that information is now limited? I have the right to copyright it and nobody can play it without my approval? Isn't that the same situation?
Well, I think we got a lot of problems out there with these laws on not only copyright, but it goes from the music industry to the published word. And the problem is there's too many patents out there and copyrights. There's too many people out there who want to put a price and a trademark on word of mouth and intellectual property, as they call it. And I think it should be public domain. I guess it's not. You can look at, look what happens with music. Look how Paul McCartney learned the hard way when he taught Michael Jackson how to buy trademark music, and then Michael Jackson bought the Beatles discography right from underneath him. I guess it all really comes down to the mighty dollar and the banksters again. I wish it was public domain.
Yeah, I mean, I just find that kind of interesting because of the context of it. Because in 1994, CBS did a documentary with Mike Wallace. It was called The 20th Century with Wallace. And the King estate claimed copyright and sued CBS because they used a portion of that speech without their permission. And this judge ruled in favor of the King estate, which is puzzling to me, because as a public figure, you know, I speak all the time. You know, I'll send out press releases on occasion. I do these different things. You know, so does that mean that everything that I do, once I put it in writing and send it out in a press release, does that give me limited publication and copyright protection? Because if it does, then all these politicians who are out there running these negative ads and using public statements against these guys, how can they get away with that either? Because a politician is a public figure, but you know what? So was Martin Luther King Jr. I fail to see the difference in that, so I'm wondering if that's a way to attack all these negative ads and everything else. Let somebody claim copyright and start playing the legal game. If it's good enough for Martin Luther King Jr., you know, and I'm not trying to discount his message at all, because I'm a huge fan of Martin Luther King Jr., but if it's good enough for that, then it should be good enough for everybody. So I'm trying to figure that one out.
I'm not the biggest Martin Luther King Jr. fan. I mean, I think a lot of people will worship his image these days, and I know he taught a lot of himself. If you read some of his stuff when he's involved in all of his adulterous behavior, he taught a lot of himself, but his worshipers today think even more of his image, but they don't think much of his thoughts, because He was, you know, all things being said, adultery aside and communism aside, he was a peace activist. And it does make me wonder, what would the peace activist Martin Luther King Jr. say about these three or four cases that we have every day of black-on-white crime? What would he think about that?
Well, see, that's a good point, and I think you just summarized it pretty good about Dr. King, because, you know, when I say I'm a big fan of Dr. King, it is because of his peace activism and the message that white and black should all get along. He was not out there preaching division. He was not out there preaching white is better than black or black is better than white. He was challenging everybody to find a way to get along, to promote peace, and make a better world. And I like that. I appreciate Dr. Martin King for that. It's not that I idol him or worship him. You know, I don't do any man.
Yeah.
You know,
well,
I mean,
you
I'm just
but
saying.
A lot of people do today. You know, they made him into
a folklore hero.
He has his own day on the calendar, even when we took away things like Washington's birthday and Lincoln's birthday as days that were off from the government indoctrination camps called public schools. They all have Dr. King's birthday off. And again, I don't think the way they were presenting him is what he would be saying today. I know his son is involved in kind of pimp pushing him and pushing the image and that almost like Coca-Cola, the Martin Luther King Jr. image. But didn't he also, I don't have my computer in front of me, but didn't he also have a daughter who has become big in the pro-life movement and who has kind of chastised the rest of the family over their ties to the black culture today?
Well, Alveda King is who you're talking about. Alveda King is an exemplary young woman, and, you know, she's anti-abortion and everything else, you know, but she does. She gets chastised quite a bit, and she's probably, if you pay attention to what Alveda King does and everything else, you pay attention to what Dr. King was doing, and you do a side-by-side comparison, you're going to find that Alveda King actually parallels, you know, Dr. King's message. I mean, she is the female version of Dr. King, in my opinion. She most closely resembles his teachings out of anybody in the family or anybody who claims to be a King follower.
Yeah,
it's really interesting, too. Yeah, go ahead.
No, she says a lot of things, like you said, that he was saying back in the day, but I get the impression that she's not invited to too many family picnics.
Well, she's not. She's an outcast, and, you know, and that's wrong. I mean, you know, for those who want to sit here and worship Dr. King, or they want to go ahead and play the game of worshiping Dr. King, you know, to sit here and make Dr. Alveda King an outcast, you know, and everything else is just a mockery of everything that you know, Martin Luther King Jr. was doing. And I tell you, it's really interesting, too, because, you know, you look at a lot of the stuff, your Jesse Jacksons, your Al Sharptons, and those guys. You know, I was actually reading some today, doing some reading and catching up on a lot of this, and I was actually having people that, you know, people within the black community truly comparing Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton to Dr. King, and the only thing I'm thinking is Dr. King would be rolling over in his grave, and for a peace-loving man, if he saw how divided and destroyed that these two clowns, of Sharpton and Jackson, have made the black community in this country, I think he would be the first one to buy an assault weapon and shoot them both point blank between the eyes. That's how bad these guys are and how bad they are in trying to represent Dr. King. It's just crazy. But, you know, you can't have something like this without the racism element involved. And there's a reason I bring that up. We had former Illinois Rep. Joe Walsh. Let me see if I can find that article. Do not tell me I lost it. It's in here somewhere, folks, I promise you. But we have former Joe Walsh had went out, Representative Joe Walsh went out, and did his own I Have a Dream speech recently. I don't agree with him trying to capitalize using the I Have a Dream mantra of Dr. King, but that doesn't make him a racist. You know, Joe Walsh, a representative out of Illinois, he was removed from office. He had one term in office as a Tea Party. He was beat in the last election. You know, he was on radio and decided that he was going to do his own I Have a Dream thing. It's called My Own Dream for America. And he's being accused as being a racist and using these racially charged comments and by claiming that African Americans suffer from dependency on the government plantation. His website, I'll read it to you. You tell me what you think about these. Because I personally read these. I don't see anything racist about it. I see everything being realist about it. You know, and I think that's very important. The Fox News, Juan Williams, put some of these things out there. Juan Williams has said that when you talk about the realities of today, you've got to talk about things like the family breakdown. You've got to talk about the fact that 70% of black children today are born out of wedlock. And Juan Williams of Fox News said that he thinks Dr. King would be crying today seeing everything that's going on. I kind of agree with him. Apparently so does Joe Walsh. Joe Walsh decided to put these down as what he believes his own dreams would be. And Dale, I'm going to read these, and I want you to get your feeling on this. First one, he said, I have a dream that all black parents will have the right to choose where their kids attend school. Is that racist? I have a dream that all black boys and girls will grow up with a father. Is that racist? I have a dream that young black men will stop shooting other young black men. I have a dream that all young black men will say no to gangs and to drugs. You know, we have all of these things out there. You know, these are the things that are going on out there. You know, I have a dream that all black young people will graduate from high school. What do you think about some of these, Dale?
Well, if he said it and he remembered Tea Party, he'd be calling white racists. So, you know,
well, he is being called a
racist.
Thing.
I know,
yeah,
that's
he is
saying.
Being called, yeah.
Is he a Democrat politician from Illinois?
You know, a good question. No, he's actually he was a Republican out of Illinois. He was registered Republican, but he's
that's Illinois.
A party
kind of hard to tell them apart.
I'll see. There you go. That's it. You know. And, you know, but he goes on with these things, and he continues talking about this. I have a dream that young black men won't become fathers until after they're married. You know, mm-hmm. I have a dream that young unmarried black women will say no to young black men who want to have sex. You know, I have a dream that black America will take responsibility for improving their own lives. You know, and the last one here, I have a dream that one day black America will cease their dependency on a government plantation which has enslaved them to lives of poverty instead of allowing them to depend on themselves, their families, their churches, and their communities. Now, what's so fascinating about all of these to me, and maybe I just run in a different circle, I don't know, but what's so fascinating to me about all of these things is most of the people in the African community that I talk to, in the African-American community, tell me these same things constantly. They don't use the words, I have a dream. But they're constantly complaining about black leadership blaming racism in the system and not taking care of their own neighborhoods. They're constantly complaining that 74% of their children are born to single mothers and that the fathers are non-existent in the homes. Now, don't get me wrong, folks. This happens in white community as well. This isn't one race. But in the white community, those numbers are a lot lower, although they're raising. They're going upwards. I'm not going to deny that. All right? But how can the black community sit here and say that white America is the problem? Thank you, Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton. And in reality, if you're not going to be able to take responsibility for your own neighborhoods and your own community, how can you expect anything to be better? What do you think, Dale?
Yep. No, I agree with you. I didn't realize he was a white Republican, so that obviously makes him racist if he's a white Republican. But the difference is when whites commit some heinous crime, and we know that based on the population numbers and the census numbers, they commit them on a far lower percentage than blacks in America. But we know when whites commit these crimes, you and I and others will call them on the carpet on it. But the problem is we're not hearing enough blacks call out the black-on-white crime. That's the difference.
Oh, I think that's a given. I mean, when you sit here and look at the travesty and the mockery that we call the Trayvon Martin and George Zimmerman situation, the Zimmerman trial, and you look at all of these things, and we continue, I mean, on a daily basis, we've got records of black mob attacks on white individuals. We've got record. I mean, we just had three black kids beat up a white child on a school bus. It was all over the news. The bus driver didn't do anything about it, and they refused to call that a hate crime. You know, but you've got Eric Holder in the Department of Justice up in Washington trying to make George Zimmerman and Stand Your Ground laws. You know, they're trying to figure out how to pull a federal case on George Zimmerman and bypass Stand Your Ground laws because they consider that a hate crime, even though Trayvon Martin attacked George Zimmerman. You know, this is the whole problem. It's that whole hypocrisy. You're absolutely right. That's the whole hypocrisy. But I tell you, there's one guy out there that I'm starting to pay attention to. And I think he might make a difference. And I'll tell you how. You know what? What's about that when we get back from the break? We've got to take the bottom of the hour break. Folks, we're going to take the bottom of the hour break. You're listening to the Ed Spencer Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. So you're driving down the road, minding your own business, and bam, something hits your windshield and leaves a ding, or even worse. Has this happened to you? Don't worry, folks. Help is here. Huntsman Auto Glass is family-owned and operated right here in Louisville. Huntsman Auto Glass only uses original equipment manufacturer replacement glass, and in most cases, any repair or replacement is paid for by your auto insurance. That's right. No deductible, no cost to you. Call Huntsman Auto Glass at 502-214-8566 or go to huntsmanautoglass.com for more info. Huntsman Auto Glass, where they will fix your smash in a flash. Tell them Ed sent you.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email MyViewMatters at AOL.com for advertising opportunities. Make a sound.
But if everybody got over it, we'd never have nothing to complain about. You wouldn't have a show to listen to. So, hey, you know what? Thanks for keeping me employed. I guess that's the best I can say. You know, we are back here at the Inspiration Show on the MVM Radio Network, home of LouisvillePolitics.com. For you guys that want to call in, 858-683-1326. The Louisville area, 502-805-0334. And for you guys in the listening queue, there's always a bunch of them. We appreciate it. Just hit that number one on your dial pad, and we'll get you on air just as soon as possible. Dale, moving forward, I tell you, you know, I'm starting to pay more attention to the Senate race that's going on up in New Jersey. You know, of course, New Jersey is always a big thing to watch anyway with Chris Bubba Christie up there. But this one involves direct New Jersey Mayor Cory Booker. For you guys who don't know who Cory Booker is, the mayor of Newark, New Jersey, he also just announced recently that he plans on running for the U.S. Senate seat in October. That Senate seat was vacated recently, so he's running for that seat. But the reason that Cory Booker stood out to me today is this morning he decided to go ahead and announce his plan to reform the criminal justice system. He says he's going to make that his primary focus if he wins this seat. Now, what I like about this is he states the obvious. Booker goes on to state in his speech this morning that one of the biggest problems and a waste of taxpayer dollars that he sees in the society, especially where he's at. You know, he has watched police have to arrest, rearrest, and rearrest again the same people and just send them through this revolving door system so nobody's getting rehabbed. It's become a nightmare for paying for it. You know, so reoffending is commonplace, and nothing is being safer because you're just bringing them in, putting them out, bringing them in, putting them out, trying to make money, but you're costing more than you can make. Well, Dale, the reason this is important, man, is because a lot of these things he's talking about, stuff we have been advocating for years. You took the lead on this a long time ago. But some of the reforms that Booker is advocating, he wants to step up the national conversation on decriminalizing marijuana. Don't like stepping up the conversation. I would have preferred it. He said we're going to decriminalize marijuana. But that's a step in the right direction, right?
Well, I think maybe by him saying it like that, him not taking a hard stance, that's his way of trying to get both sides. It sounds like so far just a typical politician. But, again, without me knowing too much about him, he's a black Democrat, correct?
Yes.
He's a black Democrat,
yes.
So he won't be called a racist. He won't be called Uncle Tom because he's not a Republican. He's not a black Republican. So it is interesting if he goes any further with it as a black Democrat, if they'll let him get away with it or not.
Well, see, my first impression was the first thing out of your mouth. That's just politics, trying to play the middle of the road, basically. All right?
Yep.
But then I read further. One of the other key points he put out there, now he's putting himself out on there. He says he wants to eliminate mandatory minimum sentences for low-level drug offenders. That's not talking about discussing it. He wants to eliminate it for the mandatory minimum sentences. That's something you've been talking about forever. He wants to eliminate the sentencing disparity between crack cocaine and powder cocaine. As we know, if you're caught with crack cocaine versus powder cocaine, your sentence is larger for some reason. We have no idea why. He wants to increase federal funding for drug and community courts so that they can put low-level drug offenders into the system instead of putting them in prison. Now, that to me is a little controversial, and I'll tell you why. Because if you're talking about trying to save taxpayer money by eliminating the revolving door, if you're taking money from one hand to put into the other, you know, are you really saving money? You know, for me, in the long run, you may be. If rehab works, and it doesn't always work, but if rehab works and you've saved money in the long run, these people aren't going back to jail 2, 3, 4 times and getting longer and longer sentences. What do you think about that?
Well, I think, for one, just going back to the decriminalization part of it, he thinks things that, like I said, they need to get out there in the open, and we'd like to see him go further than just making a talking point. And when he talks about those things, he could get elected, or he could come up accidentally car wrecked to death or plane wrecked to death, because he's fighting against two sides. You've got the government, the federal government, who wants to keep these draconian drug laws, and we've seen that in Kentucky, where everybody except the Kentucky State Police and the governor want us to have hemp and maybe even marijuana. But on the other side, you have the drug dealers. So you're going to have the drug dealers are going to lose their business, and the government's going to lose their business. So like I said, he's on the right start. It's a good start. If he goes further, he could either get elected or get assassinated.
Well, see, there you go, because I think that's where he's put himself. I think that's the corner he's put himself in. I do like the fact that he wants to eliminate the minimum sentences. He wants to eliminate any sentencing disparities. I mean, cocaine is cocaine, whether it's crack or powder form. I do like the fact that he wants to fund drug and community courts and take these low-level drug offenders out of jail. Because, you know, once you get into that round robin of going in and out of jail, you know, you can forget anything else. That's your life. I mean, it really is for most people. You know, when you have 70 and 80% recidivism rate, that's an alarming thing. He wants to work to end the use of private prisons. Normally, I would say I would disagree with that because I like to have as much privatized as we can. However, we are continuing to see these private prisons are becoming a large part of the problem, not the solution. You know, how many times are we seeing now where guards and everybody else are working with inmates on the inside, you know, distributing, you know, drugs or anything else? So I think we need to get into the government side of the prisons, but I want to make sure we can maintain that cost effectiveness because it is a lot cheaper in some cases.
Well,
for prison
for an open sentence seat, right? He's going for an open sentence seat, correct?
Right.
So
right.
The question is going to be, where does he get the money to fund himself? Who is going to fund him? Follow the money. I want to know who's going to fund him. It's not going to be the big drug dealers who will laundry money to get into him because he's going to hurt their business. It's not going to be the giant blue thugs of the DEA or the other draconian government officials. It's not going to be the prison complex. So who's going to fund his campaign? He's not going to have a big reward chest like the Turtle Man in Kentucky. So who's going to fund this guy's campaign?
That's an interesting question. And I tell you what, I think I've got a partial answer for you. Because, you know, we continue to talk about, you know, everybody likes to label the Tea Party as nothing but a bunch of ultra-right-wing Christian conservative white guys. They don't really understand that there are a hell of a lot of Democrats and people of color that identify with the Tea Party. You think the Tea Party could be part of the funding for this? Because a lot of what he's saying right here, you know, eliminate the minimum sentencing, make everything equal, blah, 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 those are the Tea Party mantras. You know, is that a possibility that the Tea Party or maybe even some libertarians will help him financially?
I think it could be if he was running further south or further west. I just think up there in New Jersey, it's going to be a typical uniparty operation. I think you're going to have the circus in town again. You're going to have the same big wigs, the same guys from the lobbyists coming out and funding whoever's opponent is. I don't know if he's going to have a Democrat primary. I know it's an open seat, but I just don't see the Tea Party taking an interest too much in a Democrat in New Jersey. If he was down here, it could be interesting.
Well, you know, I would agree with you if it was a state or a local election. But on a federal level, I don't think they're going to take the interest they would certainly in a Mitch McConnell race. But I think ultimately because it's a national race and they know that the trend in New Jersey is to elect Democrats, you know, would you want a Democrat – if your chances are going to get a Democrat anyway, do you want the ultra-left-wing liberal Democrat that typically would win those jobs in New York – those elected positions representing you in Washington, or do you want to take a moderate, you know, Democrat like Cory Booker appears to be, somebody that you can work with that believes in some of the same values you do? That I could see. Then I could see them kind of getting involved. I don't think they're going to get involved on a great scale, but like I said, a partial answer, because I think that he can go to them and seek some help funding and financially, and I think he can get some. Will it be enough? I don't know. No, but I do find a couple of other things, too. He wants to pass the Voter Empowerment Act of 2013. That essentially is to restore federal voting rights for former prisoners. And, you know, that's one thing we've talked about many times. Once you've paid your debt to society and gotten out of jail and your probation and everything else is up, you know, your rights should be restored automatically because you paid the sentence that you were told to pay. So, you know, I like that, too. You know, it is really interesting, and you know, there's another thing here too.
Well, they should have their rights restored to them. And here's the thing: too often people make that a partisan or a racial thing because nobody wants to forgive George Zimmerman for being able to go out and be a human being and go places. So all of a sudden, we're seeing these George Zimmerman sightings, and the guy's a free man; he should be allowed to go where he wants because he was acquitted of any charges. That's the constitutional way. They had a case. They had a horrible case against him, which, in my opinion, should have been brought, but they brought it against him, and he's a free man. So he, you know, people may not like what he's doing, but again, nobody gets mad when O.J. Simpson was out doing all his stuff after he was convicted in a civil court. And again, he was not too smart because he went out and ended up stealing sports memorabilia. It's almost like the Al Capone thing with the taxes. That's the thing they got him on, so to speak. And if you're found not guilty and you keep your nose clean, you should be able to do what you want. If you want to own a firearm, which is you're not allowed to in many states, even up in New Hampshire, I know a gentleman up there on talk radio who is a felon, so he can't own a firearm. But I think if you're found either innocent, guilty, or you've already served your time, you should be able to do all the things the rest of us can do.
Well, I'm in total agreement with that. You know, as a matter of fact, I've helped a few ex-felons here in Louisville. I've given them the information that they needed to go ahead and reapply to get their rights and everything else back, and all of which have been successful to date. There's probably about four or five, and all of them have been successful after I've given them the information, talking through it. You know, so, I mean, I agree with that. I mean, once you've done your penance, so to speak, then, you know, it's time to move on and let you become a member of society. And that's one thing that brings me back to Booker, because one other thing I want to put out here about Booker as mayor of Newark. Booker worked with something called the Conservative Manhattan Institute. I'm sure you've heard of the Manhattan Institute. But they actually worked and developed an initiative that was going to help prisoners reenter society once their terms were up. And according to a 2011 report in The Economist, and I guess I'll put that link in the chat room. I'll do that here in a second. Booker's Reentry Program began in 2008. And since the program began, and it's a three-year period from 2008 to 2011, 60% of the people who took part in it managed to find work and have not reoffended. Only 10% overall have reoffended and reentered the prison system. So, you know, 60% were able to find work. 90% have not been back in jail. You know, that's a damn good number. And if this works in Newark and Booker architect this and put it together, and, you know, if that holds true, how many millions of dollars is that saved? And that's where that money gets redirected into rehab and things like that. So I'm kind of curious to do some more research on this. I didn't have time to get more research done today. But I'm curious to get some more research done on that, and I hope that you know, this is something that could actually work, because I think it would be a great deal of money saved, and maybe more people would get help. If you decriminalize the drugs and you put a rehab facility out there, it's definitely worked in other countries. Why can't it work here, you know?
Yep, I agree.
All right. And then, of course, George Will probably just got himself labeled as a racist. He was on ABC News over the weekend this week with George Stephanopoulos. And, you know, he was talking about Black America's plight. And he basically said it was because of the number of single mother households in the community. And cited as his source, according to a 2010 study, 72% of Black children are born to unwed mothers. You know, an original study that was done by a scientist at Harvard who was working with the Labor Department many years ago. His name was Daniel Patrick Moynihan. Does that name sound familiar? At that time, only 24% of African American children were born to unmarried women. Today, it's 72%. And George Will goes on to say that he thinks that's the biggest impediment to the African-American community, and he may be right, but I tell you, here's something that we have to look to, though, because if you go to the Atlantic, Ta-Nehisi Coates, she broke down the numbers in a different way. George Will is right, the 72% of Black children are born to unwed. She's absolutely right about that. But Ta-Nehisi Coates pointed out some things, too, that I thought were very interesting, and it makes you, gives you a more accurate picture, I guess. But the number of unmarried Black women has substantially grown, as we just said, 72%. But the actual birth rate, the birth rate per thousand for Black women is the lowest that it's ever been since they started documenting this stuff. So unmarried Black women are not having babies at the highest rate that they were before. So 72% may be unwed, but that doesn't mean that there's that many more children being born to unwed mothers. In fact, those numbers are dropping. So that's a good sign in the community. And it's not just Black children and Black women. I mean, this is overall, this is the white community as well. We're seeing more or less and less children born to unwed mothers overall as a country. But she also goes on to point out that while a large number of Black women are choosing not to get married, you know, a lot of those Black women are also choosing not to bring kids into the world, and I think that's an excellent point. If you look at the drop in the birth rate, you know, and you look at that overall, even though we're showing a higher percentage of unwed mothers, unwed Black mothers having children, you know, at 72%, you know, the number of children being born to unwed Black mothers is substantially lower. So I think that ultimately we're seeing a positive overall. Does that make sense?
That makes sense. I'm just a little bit cynical, and I have to wonder if we're having less birth rates, does that mean we're having higher abortion rates?
Well, you know, that's the cynical part to hit me, too. I'm willing to...
That's in the room we're not supposed to talk about, but I'm just...
Well, I'm willing to focus on the positive right now. You know, and I think that's a very valid question, because, you know, are you having less children? Is it because abortions are higher? And I think ultimately...
I mean, what if something is happening? If you point to a statistic, and again... You and I will be called racist just because we're talking about this, because I, you know, I'm the blue-eyed, blonde-haired devil after all. But it's a statistic, and if a group is having less children, one of two things is happening. They're either saving themselves and they're taking a vow of chastity, or they're having more abortions. It's one of two.
Well, and I think that's the elephant.
They're doing the right things with birth control, and I know the Catholic Church isn't like that, but maybe that's what it is. Maybe they're just doing the right things with birth control and the method, routine and all that. Maybe they're just being more more intelligent, being smarter about it, and that would be a good thing.
Well, over the years, I can say this much. Over the years, statistically speaking, the abortion rate among black single women has skyrocketed. Now, is this the reason in this particular story that George Will is putting out there and George Stephanopoulos is? Don't know. They did not bother to go to the statistics, but it is a big concern. You know, as a matter of fact, it's being called black genocide by some prominent African American leaders. So, you know, that's a very valid question, Dale. It really is.
Now, I want to make it clear, because I don't want to sound like the neocon hypocrites who get called on the carpet, because you have a lot of neocons who notoriously will say, well, they shouldn't be having all the sex, and then they shouldn't be having the babies, but they also shouldn't be having an abortion. And so you can't have it both ways. So maybe it's the third route. Maybe they're just being smarter, and they truly are having, quote-unquote, safer sex. And if that's what they're doing, then that's a good thing.
I can't argue with you there. I hope you didn't hear me clearing my throat there, man. I apologize.
I did. I was going to say stop, drop, and roll, but... Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I apologize, man. These silences have been bad. I usually hit that kill switch, and I don't think I got it in time that time. You know, but yeah, you're right. I mean, it is a major concern. You know, and there's other things, you know, that we need to look at, too. I mean, the rate of abortion overall in this country is in control. Planned Parenthood is finally coming under the gun quite a bit. You know, we're starting to find the overbilling, the false billing, you know, live birth recorded. So there's a lot going on the abortion scene. The only thing that's not changing is, these women who like to go out to the bars and get drunk at night and get knocked up because they don't believe in safe sex, you know, still fighting for their right to choose. You know,
but they should do that. I've said it a long time. If there was a politician out there who had the balls to do this, they wouldn't get reelected. They'd be run out on a rail. But there's a politician at any level who had the balls to do this. They need to propose a bill, whether it be state law, and prepare, you know, preferably state law or federal law. That just means a 10th Amendment guy. But somebody who has the balls, Republican or Democrat, preferably Democrat, they may be able to get away with it more. A politician needs to propose a bill that says, you know, we agree that abortion should be safe and legal, so we propose that all abortions should be provided at no cost. They have to be done pro bono. And you would see the biggest racket ever, because abortion is a huge industry. Well, just say that doctors have to perform those for free, and doctors who perform abortions would be going the way of doctors who take Obamacare.
You're absolutely right about that. Now, you can't force anybody to work for free. That would be against law. However, that doesn't mean that our tax law has
to be. We want to be safe and legal, so it's for the women, Ed. We need to be for women's rights and give them all free abortions. They should all be free.
I can agree with you there. And
no politician would ever get that through.
Here's something interesting I want to point out, too, before we get into closing arguments. I told you that we had an ex-congressman who had sex with a subordinate, won clemency from a president who had sex with a subordinate, and then was hired by a clergyman who had sex with a subordinate. Would you believe me?
I would. I'd say, what part of Illinois is this happening?
Very, very good, sir.
Well,
I'm
by
the name of Mel Reynolds. Does that name sound familiar to you?
Yeah.
Mel Reynolds is a former Chicago Democrat congressman.
I was hired by story. I knew it had to be Illinois.
Of course. He was hired by Jesse Jackson and put on his Rainbow Push Coalition's payroll. For those who don't know the story behind Reynolds, a short version is Reynolds was one of 176 criminals that were pardoned by President Clinton. At the end of his presidency, in that last-minute forgiveness spree he did, he was pardoned as 176 criminals. Reynolds received a commutation of a 6.5-year federal sentence for 15 convictions of wire fraud, bank fraud, and lies to the FEC. He is probably more known to most of you because he was concurrently serving 5 years for sleeping with an underage campaign volunteer. So the ex-congressman, Mel Reynolds, had sex with an underage campaign volunteer. He got clemency from President Bill Clinton, and we all know about Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky. And then he was hired by the Reverend Jesse Jackson, who had sex and fathered a child with one of his subordinates. And what was he hired to do as part of the Rainbow Push Coalition payroll? Now, remember, I just told you, Mel Reynolds was best known for sleeping with an underage campaign volunteer. He was hired as a youth counselor. can't make this stuff up, people. That's just the nature of the beast. Dale, final thoughts, my friend.
Well, final thoughts. We talk a lot about the politicians. We tell you, follow the votes and follow the money. People, you can't be that stupid. You keep voting for one thing in the voting booth, and you keep wondering why you get that same one thing out. In other words, you keep voting for the same old thing when you go in there and cast your ballot, and you keep getting the same old thing out of when you cast your ballot. If you keep voting the same way, you're going to keep getting the same thing. This is why you got to stop voting straight party, and you get straight party off all the ballots. When you get none of the above on all the ballots, and you make it a lot easier for independents and third parties to run, and you need to take that stupid tax write-off off the tax forms. You keep voting for Democrats and Republicans, you're going to keep getting the crimes committed by Democrats and Republicans. You got to stand up to them and say death to the New World Order.
Thank you, sir. And that's always my cue. And I got to tell you, folks, you know, I want to go a little bit different direction. I don't know enough about Cory Booker to sit here and give you a resounding endorsement of this guy. New Jersey Mayor Cory Booker, as we talked about earlier. I will tell you this. He's a guy to be watched. He's a guy to be checked out. And he may be a guy to reckon with. So far, what Cory Booker has put out there publicly has been pretty impressive to me. His activism on behalf as a mayor and on behalf of felons and former criminals and the way that he feels about the prison system and stuff is exactly what a lot of people, and I would dare say the majority of people in this country, want to have done. We want to get sick of dealing with these low-level criminals. Our prison system is made up for murderers and hardcore criminals. It's not made up for guys who get caught with an ounce of weed. So, you know, I like where he's going with that. I want you guys to check him out. I will be doing diligence on that myself. And remember, you know, we spent a lot of time tonight talking about Dr. King and his message, and I Have a Dream. And I tell you, there's going to be some people that are going to listen to the show and think that I'm one of the most racist people there ever was because of the way that I portrayed everything on this particular show. You can think what you want. The message of Dr. King was basically the same thing as Rodney King in California many years ago during the L.A. riots. Notice the King, not related, but it's interesting both had King after their name. But Rodney King said, can't we all just get along? And essentially, that's the message Dr. King was telling all of us back in the 60s. Can't we all just get along? Can't we forget about this black and white paradigm? Can't we work together and understand our future is better by working together and moving ahead than sitting here staying divided and falling further behind? Can't we find a way to find peace with one another? If we can't find peace with one another, how can we find peace anywhere? This is not the message of Reverend Jesse Jackson or Reverend Al Sharpton, and I hate using the term reverend with these guys, because there's nothing godlike, godly, or anything to do with any positive, sincere effort on behalf of mankind overall by either one of these clowns. Al Sharpton has proven time and time again that he's a racist, so is Jesse Jackson. These guys only care about what's best for them. I think Jesse Jackson proved it again today when he hired Bill Clinton's good buddy, who doesn't mind a guy having sex with underage children and going ahead and giving these guys a full daggone clemency from a president. I think it's very clear that when you put a guy like Mel Reynolds in charge of your youth and making him a youth counselor as a convicted pedophile, you've got some serious concerns. I have a real problem with that. I have a real problem with people who are going to say that I'm a racist because I'm real, that I'm going to tell you the truth about the black community. And the fact is the black community has some problems, that the black community has become a slave to this government. That's the truth. The black population overall collects less dollars in welfare benefits than the white population does in America. But as a percentage of the population, the percentage of the black population itself that is living dependent on this slave mentality that their dear leaders like Barack Obama and Democrat liberals in Washington have been doing and force-feeding the guys a diet, that's the problem. Poverty bleeds crime. When you're poor, you want more, you're going to get it. Then you start doing stupid stuff. The black-on-black crime is bad, very, very bad. But the mainstream media doesn't want to talk about that. And now you've got an overabundance of black-on-white crime, gang mentality. Check out White Girl Bleed a lot. You may not like the message because I'm a white guy that's putting that message out there, and that's okay. I understand that. Label me anything you want. But that doesn't change the fact that the truth is the truth. And that's what this show is about. So call me what you will, say what you want, scream and holler my name at the top of your lungs or what a no-good POS I am, I don't care. But understand one thing. Anything you've heard in this show tonight or anything you've heard in this show ever is easily checked out and verified. If you're listening to this show on your computer, if you're listening to this show on your phone, if you're listening to this show in your car as part of Stitcher Radio, when you get to your next internet connection, search it. You're going to find everything I've told you is right. And until you are willing to take care of it, this is specifically to the black people in this community, until you are willing to stand up and say no more in your own community and stand up against this oppression and stand up to this government, this uniparty government that continues making you a victim, nobody can change anything or make your life any better. One little simple statement I always use everywhere I go. People will only give you what you're willing to accept. And I think that applies in every relationship throughout the world, throughout this country. If people are going to only give you what you're willing to accept, then you have to change. You have to raise your expectations and force them to accept the fact that you deserve better. And that's not just a black thing, folks. That's all of us. Have a great night. We'll see you tomorrow night with Dale the Truth at 7 o'clock with a TNT Thursday Night Truth radio show. Take care, folks. We'll see you then. So you're driving down the road, minding your own business, and bam, something hits your windshield and leaves a ding or even worse. Has this happened to you? Don't worry, folks. Help is here. Huntsman Auto Glass is family-owned and operated right here in Louisville. Huntsman Auto Glass only uses original equipment manufacturer replacement glass, and in most cases, any repair or replacement is paid for by your auto insurance. That's right. No deductible, no cost to you. Call Huntsman Auto Glass at 502-214-8566 or go to huntsmanautoglass.com for more info. Huntsman Auto Glass, where they will fix your smash in a flash. Tell them Ed sent you.